Welcome to the Old Republic Podcast.
We're a podcast that discusses Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic, general sci-fi, and about the stories that inspired a galaxy.
Consider this a spoiler warning for everything under the sun and the twin suns in that galaxy far, far away.
This is where the fun begins.
It is here, Brian, the big, scary Kreia episode that I think we've put off for about 100 episodes, because I think we were like covering like KOTOR 2 characters, and it's like we wanted the Exile and Kreia's episodes to be super special, and some people are like, you should do this, and it's like, we've tried, and it's like, it's just us. What is it that Kreia says on Malachor? It's like, or Dantooine, it's like, I think you expected some great revelation, but it's just you. So it's just us.
It's just us. It's just us and Kreia. Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I first came on, like, on board to the podcast, and we were going through, you know, the KOTOR film adaptation that we were putting together, but you'd always make comments about how one day we were going to have to talk about Kreia and how, like, daunting of a task that was. And I kind of agree. Kreia is a very, very deep character to look at, which is weird, because she's deep on one hand, but on the other hand, you know, very shrouded in mysteries. So, like, it's like an inch deep, but like a mile wide kind of thing with Kreia to wade through those waters. So it's going to be interesting to get in and talk about, you know, the character Kreia today. But I think it's going to be fun. I don't know if it's going to be as fun as the Ice Capade we're planning to put together for Kreia. Maybe that'll be better. That'll be more in our wheelhouse. But yeah, we're going to take some time to talk about Kreia. You know, we did like the passenger logs for the rest of the KOTOR 2 companions. This is going to kind of be like that, but a little bit more expanded, because, you know, yeah, Kreia, it was Kreia all along, so Kreia deserves a little bit of extra attention, I think.
Yeah, maybe the Ice Capade episode can have little vignettes, like kind of commercials where it's just like Atris Pumpkin Spice Latte Diaries or something in between it. I don't know. We're still workshopping it.
Yeah, we're still getting through it. A pumpkin spice latte would be good if you're going to the Ice Capade, because it'll be cold in the skating rink for sure. But yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun to put together, I think. But yeah, today we're here to talk about Kreia. So I guess just to get into kind of the episode here a little bit, what's kind of just like a brief overview of Kreia? Who is Kreia? How did we get to Kreia? What is the Kreia of it all?
Kreia is probably the major character of KOTOR 2. I think she's the first one that usually comes to mind when people say KOTOR 2, if not for Nihilus's cool mask, you know.
I thought
that was very relevant, you know. And she's kind of with the Exile from the very beginning on Paragus, and goes through everything, and you're kind of like, is she, you know, kind of like her Obi-Wan? Is she like the Emperor? And it's like, at the end of it, you're kind of like, yeah, and also no. And I mean, I played this when I was very young. I think a lot of it went over my head, and I was just expecting like another KOTOR, you know, like kind of like Indiana Jones adventure, like the first one was, but the second one was very philosophical. It was also broken, so that didn't help, but I think a lot of people, like, once the game was kind of patched up, it kind of played better, and people are like, this is a very deep character who makes you think, and some people look at the depth, and it's kind of like, is it really that deep, or is she just like saying you're wrong no matter what, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. She is an interesting character, and yeah, part of it is on one hand philosophical, but on the other hand, it's like a devil's advocate kind of thing, where she's just basically, you know, saying the opposite of whatever you're doing, causing you to kind of think about things. And a big part of the reason for that was the characters here were written by Chris Avellone, who you know, at the time had said in a bunch of interviews and stuff, is he wasn't like super into Star Wars, you know, since he was a little kid. He, you know, had a bunch of questions about how the Jedi were operating in the prequels up to that point, and kind of created Kreia as you know, kind of a mirror, I guess, to look at, you know, the Jedi dynamics. And I think it does a really good job of that. So, the character Kreia is voiced by Sarah Kesselman. Brian Menz was the concept artist who did most of the artwork for the character and gave Kreia her design. And as far as the character goes, you know, Kreia's history is, you know, pretty shrouded in mystery. You know, we don't know like where she's from, much about her upbringing, but we do kind of learn along the way that she was at one time a Jedi master, historian, Jedi counselor, and the master to Revan. And when Revan fell to the dark side, Kreia was blamed and expelled from the order. So that's kind of all we really know about Kreia, really, right? Kind of throughout the game. And when we first meet Kreia in the game, we think that she's dead, laying in a cot there on Paragus, right? We have no idea she's alive until she
It's
gets in our
scary.
head
Yeah.
and, you know, stays in our head for basically the rest of the game.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's funny because you try to guess how old Kreia is, and you're like, if you're kind of thinking she was RNK, who is like the mother of, you know, the handmaiden, it's like, how's the math working out there, you know? So we don't
Right.
qu quite know like what her birth date was, BBY, you know, but maybe just the dark side isn't good for anyone's skincare routine, you know,
True.
especially in KOTOR 2. So
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happened to Palpatine there. Yeah, apparently when they were doing like the casting call and like the character design for Kreia, they'd put out that Kreia was meant to be, you know, approximately like 50 years old, but they later went on to say that that wasn't really meant to be like an indication of how old Kreia actually was, just kind of the vocal range and stuff they wanted to go for the characters. So that's kind of interesting. So yeah, I don't know the timeline if that matches up or not. That's you know, some big speculation there. I think Chris Avellone even said in an interview that was clever that people picked up on that, but he was neither able to confirm nor deny that that was the case. So, you know, it's going to be one of those mysteries that's left unknown until we get, you know, something along the line, maybe pertaining to Kreia and her character there.
yeah, it's a fun mystery. So she was in the Jedi, like you said, and all we really know for sure about her is that she trained Revan at some point. And I think they say like Kreia was like his first and his last student and kind of taught Revan how to leave the Jedi Order behind. And you said like that's kind of why she was exiled, and also because she joined, you know, the Mandalorian War and probably had a child. And kind of after that, what do you think brings Kreia to the exile?
Yeah, so you know, so Kreia's kind of journey, I guess, from what we know and we're able to kind of piece together from, you know, talking with her, and that's one of the weird things about Kreia, and it's kind of weird in how she talks about herself, and then weird about how she talks about the Force, and weird how she talks about Mitra Surik, is that she's, you know, very open and talking about herself and things, but it's still like none of it's still very puzzling and kind of cryptic about what she means, right? So yeah, it, you know, started out as a Jedi teacher. Apparently a lot of the other Jedi masters used to call them Kreia's conundrums, which I think is pretty fun. Little word game there. It could be like a board game that you play sometime. That would be good.
Yeah.
There where she's just, you know, challenging the outlooks of the Jedi students. And then yeah, it was the master to Revan before Revan went on. So you know, kind of in doing that, when Revan left, you know, Kreia was held up to blame for Revan leading, so she was thusly exiled from the Jedi Order as well. And apparently most of the Jedi Council assumed that Kreia went off with Revan to fight in the wars, but apparently that's not really the case. She just kind of was bopping around the galaxy just trying to acquire some information. You know, that's what she'd been doing within the Jedi Order, you know, as a historian. She was looking at artifacts and studying them and seeing kind of the difference of opinions and the dualities of things that existed there. So that's what she was doing there. You know, kind of after she was exiled, right? She was just kind of going around the galaxy. She eventually made her way to Malachor, to you know, the home of the Mass Shadow generator, you know, that was activated by Mitra Surik. But you know, when she gets there, obviously that's already happened and taken place. So she's reaching that after the events kind of the end of KOTOR 1. And she finds the Atreus Academy, which I guess is a place where Revan had been, who'd trained like his legions and done a bunch of studying and writing about the dark side of the Force. And therefore, Kreia was going to find these and study the dark side of the Force. And that was ultimately, I guess, what led her to fall into the dark side. And, you know, that's kind of how, you know, she turns into one part of that triumvirate, is, you know, kind of stumbling across this Atreus Academy in her pursuits of, you know, just some general, I guess, Force knowledge, you know, after her being exiled.
Yeah, it's an interesting history. And I don't know, do you think Kreia ever outright lies?
I don't think that she outright lies. Like I said, whenever you're talking about her, or you know, about yourself, the player character, there or anything else, she's very kind of open and talking about it, and she'll answer things pretty directly. But you know, there's still some like air of like mystery about it. Like none of like there's always like some little gap in information that you get, so you're never able to kind of fully piece together what she's talking about. So you know, talking about her history with the Jedi, talking about her history with Revan, you know, even talking about her history with like Nihilus and Sion when they're you know, forming that Sith triumvirate there. You know, it's all just like a little spotty, so you're having to kind of fill in the gaps with your own mind. And I think that's kind of one of the neat things about her you know, character, the way that she's written and the way she, you know, portrays herself in the game, is that, you know, it allows you some space to fill in that story for yourself. Obviously, some of that story was lost due to, you know, some of the game being cut, unfortunately, and things played out a little bit differently than they might have otherwise. But I think that's one of the neat things, is it's not really a really clear picture.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of incomplete, but we can figure out for the most part what happened. I kind of wish like there had maybe been some Kreia novels or something, or like a KOTOR 3, but that didn't happen, obviously. But yeah, so eventually she becomes Darth Treya, and you mentioned the Sith Triumvirate, so the fallen Darth Nihilus with the cool mask is in it, and then also Darth Sion, the scary zombie dude, was in the Triumvirate as well.
That's right. Yeah, both of them were in the triumvirate there. We did an episode on each of those in the passenger log, so you can go back and check those out for a little bit of a deeper dive there. But you know, obviously, you know, Treya, you know, Darth Treya was kind of drawn to these two, you know, finding Nihilus there, who was basically created as a result of the Mass Shadow generator, and then Sion, and went on to, you know, to kind of mentor both of these apprentices, and then fully forming kind of this Sith triumvirate. But the trio really falters, I guess. Their ideals no longer really align, right? Sion just wants to go and just wreak damage throughout the galaxy. Nihilus just wants to, you know, kind of quote unquote eat, you know, all of the Force, you know, just consume as much Force energy as possible. But Treya doesn't really want to do that, right? She wants to rid the galaxy of the Force. So there's a little bit of, you know, coming to a head there. And then when, you know, she discovers that Mitra Surik is there and thinks that she might be able to utilize Mitra Surik's abilities, to, kind of rid the galaxy of the Force. She's demanding the other two that they leave Mitra Sirik alive, and that doesn't sit very well with either Nihilus or Sion, and that's really what splits up the triumvirate then and gets us to the start of KOTOR 2, right? The Sith triumvirate has split. She has heard of Mitra Sirik. She goes out to pursue Mitra Sirik and, is able to get her on board the Ebon Hawk before crashing onto Paragus and starting the game.
Do you think it's the betrayal of the Sith Triumvirate that makes her reject the Force, or was she already there as Sith, do you think?
I think it's almost similar to the way Revan kind of operated within the Sith, and it's obviously they went to the dark side and were members of the Sith and aligned with the Sith, but it never really was it, or at least the way I interpreted it is it's not really because they desired the things that we commonly associate with the Sith. It just happened to be the other side, right? You're either on the Jedi side or the Sith side, and that's kind of the side that Kreia here in this instance found herself on, right? Exiled from the Jedi, was searching out things and ultimately found this just massive knowledge about the Sith, which pulled her in. And we actually get to see a similar storyline like that play out within the game, right? With the Atriss, it's same thing that happens to her. It's very consuming, the dark side here, in this instance. So I don't know that it was if it was really like a betrayal like from the Sith as much as it was just had kind of have her own ideals about the way that the Force worked and operated within the galaxy and how she felt about that happening, I guess. So it wasn't really that she was so much aligned with the Jedi or with the Sith. She was really just aligned with herself.
Yeah, I guess I kind of see it like she was a Jedi and a Sith. She was pretty high up with both, knew and learned both of them well, but I think like she always had questions about either philosophy, like there's stuff to think about, like it none of them are complete philosophies, I would say. And then she's kind of rejected by them, and I think she rejects them. So it's interesting, you know? So I would say like if Star Wars like were kind of more than Jedi or Sith or red versus blue, you know? It would kind of be like her own school of philosophy. You know, would have maybe originated, and she might have been like a major philosophical, group or school maybe. But in Star Wars world, it's just like she's kind of a one-off, I would say. And it's interesting that she really didn't want the exile to be harmed. She would have protected the exile against like a lot, it seems. And it's weird, like I kind of wonder what Kreia wanted for the galaxy, because it seems like she's very anti-force, because she think like in the Star Wars galaxy, like it seems like the Force has a will of its own. It's sentient, and it seems to cause endless wars. Like, it causes the Star Wars, you know?
Right.
Which is kind of almost hilarious in a way, kind of a mind bender in a way. And I don't know. It's like Oppenheimer, you know? It's like if you turn off the Force, would it like have just like there was a percentage of a chance, like what if it just like destroyed like their galaxy far, far away? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, kind of the ultimate sort of destination that that Kreia was really looking for, is to rid the galaxy of the Force, right? To kind of take that element out of the galaxy, right? So not that there wouldn't be any Jedi or any Sith, there just wouldn't be any, I guess, kind of Force influence within the galaxy. Now, one of the reasons she was looking for Mitra Surik in particular was she realized that Mitra Surik had the ability to create Force bonds, which is how we're communicating with her throughout the game, right? So she's always in your head, kind of serving as like a narrator almost to the game, and then kind of as this conscience character. And then I guess the plan with that Force bond that Kreia had was that she was basically going to utilize that to create, you know, kind of another rift in the Force, I guess similar to what had happened with the mass shadow generator, but this time it was just going to be, you know, kind of brought about, you know, by the Force here, you know, within, I guess, these two powerful Force users, I guess. And this rift, I guess, was intended to kind of be never ending. So basically it would just kind of, I don't know, more or less be like a black hole for Force energy in the galaxy. So it just, you know, basically void the galaxy of the Force. So it, you know, kind of a more philosophical or a more midichlorian based super weapon, I guess, than the Oppenheimer weapon here, the bomb, you know, in that sense. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's interesting to, you know, to see, you know, Kreia, who goes from one allegiance to the next. And, you know, that's, you know, kind of, you know, tips me off at one of these, you know, really great quotes that we have from Kreia here is, "To believe in an ideal is to be willing to betray it. It is something no Sith or Jedi has ever truly learned." You know, and, you know, she's this deceptive character for sure, but also a very, I don't know, also a character that's very willing to look at the opposite side of something, right? So if you're, you know, whatever action you're taking, she's going to take a look at the other side of that. So, you know, be it her as, you know, Jedi Kreia or, you know, the Sith Darth Kreia, going to be, you know, willing to betray those ideals to fully understand it. So,
yeah, I think she can be a manipulative, deceptive character, but she does occasionally throw out truth bombs. Yeah, it's just so interesting from, like, a philosophical or literature point of view. Like, you could say, like, oh, she's not quite, you know, like, this or this or this or this, but kind of both of these and none of them. So yeah, it's really hard to be like, write down like, this is what Kreia literally believes, because she contradicts herself a lot. So part of me is like, I'm kind of like, she is written with a lot of depth, and maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but it's kind of just like, she's kind of the person, like, no matter what ice cream flavor you pick out for her, she's not going to be happy. Oh, well, I should have said pie flavor. Oh, darn it.
Yeah.
She would be like, the pie should not be banana cream, you know? Something, something, truth bomb, you know? So.
Right. Yeah, whichever flavor of pie you get for Kreia there at the rest stop, she's going to tell you it was the wrong flavor of pie. It doesn't matter which flavor it was. Yeah, just to be a contrarian, I think, for sure. Pie is a lie. Pie is death. Apathy is pie, maybe. Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing about it. Like you said, Cassia, it's on one hand, it is very philosophical, but, you know, the philosophy is almost taking place, like, within yourself more than within her. And to that sense, you know, if you look at her kind of role, like, in the game, right, you know, she's kind of being a guide for Mitra Surik, but she's not really being a mentor, I don't think. You don't really get any, like, mentorship, like, directly from her. It's more of just her, like, assigning you, like, a pop quiz every day, you know, as like, that kind of teacher, right? So there's that. She's kind of playing, like, the part of, like, a moral compass, but you never really know, like, what, like, the true north of that compass is, right? If she's really, you know, instilling morality on you, or if she's, instilling, you know, immorality on you so that way you can learn the morality for yourself. I think that's interesting, and I think that's why, you know, the character of Kreia is so beloved by people, you know, people that played the game, people that have, you know, watched the game and read about the game, you know, in the past, you know, 20 years that it's been out, because Kreia is so like open-ended, and you can, you know, plant, you know, anything you kind of want in those teachings, really.
Yeah, because I wrote down, like, was Kreia a good mentor? I mean, in some ways, yes, but in some ways, no. Like, I don't think, like, Kreia's quite an ideal to strive towards. I don't know if she's quite, like, a warning, you know, to kind of be like, maybe don't quite do this, even though, like, I think there are elements of her that, you know, kind of scream that, but. 'Cause I don't think she's like teaching you really right or wrong necessarily, but I think like she's teaching you to think deeper than like this guy wears the good hat, this guy wears the black hat, you know, good cowboy, bad cowboy.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things then, as you play through the game, and obviously, you know, she's giving you these life lesson kind of things along the way. When you get to the end, you're either assigned with the light side or the dark side. So really, you know, her teachings of there should be no force never really come to fruition in the game in any sort of sense. So does that mean that her teachings were a failure? Does that mean that her teachings were a success? Because that's how Mitra Sirik could potentially, you know, look at things going forward. I don't know, because you're either a dark side and you know maintain the Treyas Academy, right? Or you go on the light side and you go off, you know, you fly away on the Ebonhawk to, you know, fight another battle and to go search for Revan in the Revan novel. So.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to take, like, I don't know, you just kind of have to exit Kreia, let her die. Like, it's kind of like, I don't think Kreia would be a plant, you know, like she's not really growing anything. You know, it's just a fake plastic plant. Like, I think she's just kind of saying, like, whether it's this kind of plant, like a light side plant or dark side plant, it's wrong. It should be this plant. I think it's just like the exile has to make a binary choice, even though you're kind of told the whole time the binary choice is lacking, you know? So it's kind of like you're thinking deeper, but then it's just like there's only light side, dark side options. There's not like a gray or third option, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, that's kind of the way that the game is portrayed. I guess it wouldn't make for a very interesting video game if you get to the end and they're like, oh, you know, nothing. Even though that's, you know, what, you know, Kreia says, you know, shortly before the end of the game, you know, you're expecting answers or whatever she says. So, you know, you'll get none in that sense. So I think, you know, Kreia is really just a character, like I said, and sort of a mirror, I guess, to look at the Jedi as a whole and the way they've been portrayed, which I think is, you know, kind of interesting. And then, you know, to really just make you think about things, you know, you look at kind of the famous bit there, apathy is death, where you're giving, you know, money to, you know, someone on, was that Nar Shaddaa there, and you know, either you give it to them and you know, condemn them to death or to, you know, be beaten up or taken advantage of, or you don't give them money and you know, commit them to death or being taken advantage of. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those. Yeah, it's just an interesting conundrum. It's a Kreia conundrum, really, for the whole entire game, and I think that that's interesting. And I think that it's interesting there to play on that aspect of the Force bond, you know, different, I guess, in a way than a Force dyad, you know, but really able to kind of, I guess, convene your Force energies away. There's a little bit of different kind of takes, I guess, on how strong Kreia was with the Force, because I'd read that when Kreia was, you know, booted from the Triumvirate, she was stripped of the Force by Nihilus and Sion, so potentially she didn't even have any Force to use at all anyway to, you know, create this rift in the first place. So I don't know. That's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah. One thing that's also interesting is even though she only has one hand, like, she still sometimes holds her lightsaber like she has two hands. So it's like she has a force hand, you know, and it's like, okay.
She has a force hand. Sometimes she has three lightsabers that fly around, which yeah. is not...
And they're purple.
Which is scary. And they're purple. That's mm-hmm. right. Just like Revan's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Darth Treya, it seems more like it's a title rather than, like, the name she chose for herself. Because I think originally Atriss was going to become Darth Treya. And it's like, no matter... If there are people who are betrayed, like, there will always be a Darth Treya. So it's like, that's an interesting, you know, tradition. And it's just like, it has Treya. There's a Treya in betrayal. So it's good synergy, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. This quote here from Kreia, you know, I know that there was once a Darth Treya, and that she cast aside that role, was exiled, and found a new purpose. But there must always be a Darth Treya, one that holds the knowledge of betrayal, who has been betrayed in their heart, and will betray in turn. So, yeah, so for as, you know, kind of spotty and enigmatic as Kreia's own background is, like I said, we get to almost see kind of her storyline play out within Atriss. There, especially if you're looking into some of the restored content stuff as her, you know, fall to the dark side, you know, just surrounded by, you know, Sith teachings and holocrons and things like that, because that's, you know, basically what happened to Kreia when she got to Malachor there, to the Treya's Academy. So I like that sentiment, right? There's always going to be someone that is betrayed. So in a way, you could say that, you know, really about any of the Jedi that fall, I guess, if you look or wanted to kind of apply that, if there was like a, you know, we talk about the hero's journey or the heroine's journey, if there's like a Treya journey, maybe we could look at that and apply it to other Jedi that have fallen, you know, Dooku or Anakin or Ben Solo, you know, yeah. Any of those things.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I really kind of wish that KOTOR 2 would have played up the Atriss versus... I guess that's not really a versus. It's just the Kreia and Atriss parallel. Like, one is kind of already there, and we get to see the other one reach that point. It's kind of like when Kreia is extinguished as Treya, there's an Atriss who becomes a Treya. I don't know. It's cool. Yeah, and kind of today, all these years later, like, was it 2004 that KOTOR 2 came out? December 2004?
Yep.
Yeah, so we're almost 20 years after that release, and it kind of seems like there's been a little bit, I don't know, like, is resurgence or renaissance the more apt term? Like, especially with AI, I think a lot of people just, like, kind of create philosophical treaties read in Kreia's voice, you know? And a lot of people like discussing her, you know, lore and philosophy. And it seems like it got a lot of kids interested in philosophy, which I think is great. I guess, what do you think about, like, Kreia's impact, you know, like, beyond KOTOR 2 today?
Yeah, it seems like Kreia has, you know, really kind of gained this, I don't want to say following, but really a kind of an appreciation for the character and for the writing of the character. And I suppose that was kind of going to be, you know, the case now is, you know, kids that might have played this game when they were young and didn't really understand, you know, kind of the intricacies of the story and these characters and how they worked and interacted. I know, like, I would have been, you know, 23, 24 or something like that when I would have played it for the first time. So I don't think I even did then, right, as much as I do now. So as you get older and you can kind of analyze these things, and then obviously online you find, you know, communities of people that will talk about these things. But yeah, I think that the character of Kreia really has become almost like this linchpin figure in like a Star Wars character, is, you know, kind of this nuanced character, you know, residing within the gray, not really good or bad, but allowing you to, you know, take different looks and different interpretations of the Force. And I think that that is, you know, really, really very interesting. You know, and we're starting to see kind of more characters like that within Star Wars, I think, which is going to be fun to kind of see and experience. And then, you know, obviously there are, you know, some other kind of real world connections, but I wanted to make mention of this. Cassie, I don't know if you've seen this, but this just happened like within the last couple of weeks. You know, kind of one of Kreia's big teaching things is about, you know, the Force and free will and how intertwined they are, or how if mm-hmm. you even have it. But there's a professor at Stanford and a biologist and neuroscience department, Robert Sapolsky, who just published a book over like this like decade of research about free will, and basically came to conclusion that there isn't really such thing as free will, and just released a book called Determined: A Science of Life Without Free Will. And that just happened like within the last couple of weeks, and I just thought it was interesting.
Whoa.
Because that came out, you know, when we had just kind of had decided that we were going to finally record our Kray episode. So I haven't read the book, I can't, you know, vouch for it or anything, but I think that it sounds interesting, and I think that it sounds like reading like any of the stuff with him sounds very Kreia-esque. So I don't know if Sapolsky, you know, was a fan of KOTOR 2, I assume, maybe, I don't know, but yeah, so I thought that was interesting, that kind of coming on the heels of us talking about this big study kind of wrapped up and this book came out about free will.
Oh wow. Too long didn't read yet, you know, free will doesn't exist, people. Yeah, we can use that as a teaser, I guess. So, what's the title of the book again? I'll have to put that in my shelves.
Yeah, it is called Determined: A Science of Life Without Free Will. And the author is Robert Sapolsky.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to check that out. The mind is a mystery, and so is the Force, and, you know, so is Kreia, really. And, yeah, this big, scary Kreia episode is becoming less scary, you know? It's becoming more manageable. It's, like, it's fun to talk about kind of big ideas, and sometimes these big ideas have real-world, you know, impacts, you know? Like, we can be talking about a fictional, you know, like, space opera world, and if it helps some people understand like scientific studies with a deeper appreciation, or learn more philosophy, like I think that is better. It seems like kind of like when KOTOR 2 came out, there was a lot of baggage. It kind of came out, people didn't quite get what they expected, and it was just kind of unfinished, and I'm kind of glad that we've had, like, 20 years to really reflect on it, and I think, like, the writing, which was fresh, you know, at the time, and you kind of just see, like, I think KOTOR 2 is, like, the best KOTOR 2 we could have gotten, and it seems like a lot of people are more receptive towards Kreia, and actually kind of prefer KOTOR 2 to KOTOR 1.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely an argument, you know, that you could make. Obviously, you know, the first KOTOR is the more polished of the two games, obviously. You know, there from that instance, I think that the story for KOTOR 1 is probably a little neater. But if you want to do any sort of, like, digging on the characters, you can almost find them, like, as interesting or even more interesting than the KOTOR 1 companions. And that was one of the big takeaways I had when, you know, we were doing our passenger logs and kind of going through the companions, because, you know, kind of at the time when you're playing the game, you're mostly thinking about, you know, Mitra Surik, you're thinking about, you know, chasing down the Sith Lords, you're thinking about Kreia being in your head the whole time, and, you know, trying to figure out these riddles that she's laying out. But there's a lot of depth there within the characters for KOTOR 2, and I think that's one of the big reasons why it's, you know, kind of stayed around, because normally if you think about a video game coming out and, you know, being as, you know, buggy and incomplete, you know, it's like an immediately death sentence for it. But that wasn't the case with KOTOR 2 for sure, because there was enough good stuff there to kind of overshadow that. And, you know, luckily for us, that was the case, because, you know, it left us with a lot of really great stuff to think about and talk about and to expand that Star Wars universe for us. So I think that you know, is really, really cool out there. And I think that it's neat that, you know, coming up on, you know, 20 years, you know, 19 years this month, I think, you know, there's even more of it. We've had, you know, the expanded, you know, the restored content mod. There's more stuff. There's more, like, interviews happening about KOTOR 2 now than ever before. And, you know, there's still, like, a bunch of stuff to learn about the game. You know, every time you play the game, you're going to get kind of different story beats and story elements. So it's definitely worth, like, revisiting and, you know, playing through the restored content mod if you can, and just, you know, learning more about these characters, and especially Kreia, and trying to piece together her story for yourself is a really fun exercise.
Yeah, I guess. Do you have any, like, Kreia quotes you love?
I mean, aside from apathy is death, of course, which is the one that everyone knows for sure. But yeah, there's a lot of them. And, you know, there are quotes about, you know, the Jedi. There are quotes about the Sith. There are quotes about how either of them are, you know, wrong or right, or about how she is right. So she has a lot of great quotes. There's a couple of really good ones. It is not the destination that matters. It's the journey. But I think maybe my favorite one, and it revolves around Darth Revan, and, you know, this isn't really an episode about Darth Revan, but I think that it's interesting, kind of coming from Kreia here, and how she's talking to Mitra Surik about Revan, and she says, "Perhaps Revan never fell. The difference between a fall and a sacrifice is sometimes difficult, but I feel that Revan understood that difference more than anyone knew. The galaxy would have fallen if Revan had not gone to war." And I think that that's really interesting, and I think that that is kind of a fascinating look at a character who, you know, we see with the cool mask and we say, ah, Revan left the Jedi, went off to war, you know, fought this battle, became this, you know, ultimate Sith Lord, doing hallway scene after hallway scene, you know, but, you know, she's, you know, distilling it down that, you know, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that he, you know, wanted to go to war to pursue those things. It was a sacrifice he made to save the galaxy. And I think that that's interesting.
Yeah. Because he was a cool dude in a mask who looked like Keanu Reeves, so he wasn't really evil.
that's right.
Yeah. I love the quote, "It is such a quiet thing to fall, but far more terrible is to admit it." And you can define fall in many, many ways, you know? Like, it can be like, I used to adhere to, you know, this belief, this political persuasion, like this, you know, restaurant chain, and it's like it's changed, and like sometimes like you go through changes, and like sometimes like you kind of subconsciously know, but like to consciously kind of be like, I'm not that person anymore, you know, like that can be a big change. And I also did like apathy is death, and there is a great YouTube video done by Doodoo Film on YouTube. It is called Kreia, Feel This Moment, Star Wars, and there's kind of clips from like, I think, like, all of the Star Wars films except for 9, because it came out 4 years ago, so I don't think it had clips from that movie. But, like, whenever, like, kind of during the pandemic and after, like, when I was kind of contemplating, like, life, death, the universe, everything, like, and it was kind of too overwhelmed, like, I would kind of listen to that. It has Audio Machines music called The Truth, and like it's funny because I think Kreia hates the Force, but she's able to define it so well. So like in some ways I kind of wonder if, you know, like Kreia in a way loves the Force, or loved it, you know, because she's able to describe it so accurately. Like, it's almost like Lady Bird, you know, where they're kind of like, you really love your neighborhood. You describe it so, with so much detail and attention. And it's like attention and details is kind of love. And it's like just so many thoughts, you know, like just come from Kreia. And it's like something that came out 4 years ago. And it's like, I love it. And it's got me through like some hard times. So I kind of love that whole chat she has. Like when I believe it's the Handmaiden asks Kreia what the Force is, and she kind of describes it, and it's beautiful to hear, in my opinion.
Yeah, she does. She speaks about the Force very eloquently and very kind of standoffish. And that makes me wonder, it's not actually something that I'd really thought of until, you know, we've had this conversation about Kreia. But part of me now wonders if Kreia's desire to rid the galaxy of the Force was just that she was so infatuated with it and she needed it to be gone
Oh.
and out of her life, right? Because you have you have her saying things like things are nothing compared to the Force, or the Force is a powerful thing to wield or deny. Kind of all of these things, right? Nothing is impossible with the Force. So she's talking about it like very lovingly on one hand, but almost like a scorned like lover of the Force on the other hand. So so maybe I'm thinking now that Kreia just
Her
wanted to rid the galaxy of
boyfriend
the
was the
Force.
Force.
Because
Yeah.
she couldn't stand to indulge in it or to be without it, so.
Yeah. And all these years later, the Force moved on with Shmi Skywalker, I guess. And maybe Kreia's like, what? That would be funny.
That's right.
Yeah, that was really deep what I just said there. But it was deep until I ruined it. But with a weird joke, but yeah, like I think KOTOR 2's impact on storytelling in video games would be nowhere without Kreia. Because I think people like the companions, but when they talk about KOTOR 2's story, it seems like they're talking about Kreia, you know? So.
Right. Yeah, you very, very rarely hear anyone, waxing on and on about, Han Har or Mikal, right? You're only you're hearing about Kreia. Maybe Atten a little bit, and those are some of the more fun interactions when Kreia is talking down to Atten. That's pretty good usually. But yeah, usually when people are talking about KOTOR 2, they're talking about Kreia.
Yeah, I guess. Do you kind of see the legacy of Kreia's character in Star Wars today?
I think that I do kind of in a stance where I think you have more characters now, be it in in the live action stuff and this the sequel trilogy and kind of the TV shows that we've gotten in the books and the High Republic books, as the way that the storytellers and the characters within those stories are examining the Force and what it means and what it means to be a part of the Force. I think could pretty much directly or at least indirectly, reflect back into kind of these things that Kreia was saying about the Force back in KOTOR 2. It wasn't as, black and white sort of a thing. And I think that's, kind of the writing for Kreia was meant to do that, right? Looking at the prequel era Jedi, which were, the Star Wars stories that were coming out when this game was made, right? They were very, kind of orthodox in their beliefs and things like that. And Kreia, took that and flipped it on its head, right? It's like,
Yeah.
what do these, what does this Jedi code, mean? What does it stand for? It doesn't stand for anything beyond what you're willing to believe in it and do with it. And you need to be willing to, disobey it or go against it. There's none of these are right answers. And I think that was the case definitely then, and kind of, and as a response, I guess, to the prequel era Jedi. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of kind of influence on the way that the Jedi are being portrayed and examining the Force here. In the current, slate of Star Wars storytelling that we're getting.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I think I kind of spoiled this earlier, but I don't think Kreia would have a favorite ice, well, I was going to say ice cream flavor, but what I meant to say is I don't think Kreia would have a favorite pie flavor. She would just say apathy is death, or like it rhymes, like the pie is a lie, kind of like a riff on the Portal 2. Like the cake is a lie, but
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, you for sure would get her some pie, and she would say that that is the incorrect pie. Or maybe she would tell you that you are wasting your time having pie. And then if you didn't get pie, she would tell you that you are not taking your time enough to stop and have some pie. So either way, you can't win. You can't win with Kreia. So just get whatever kind of pie you want, and she can deal with it.
Yeah. I guess is that your answer too? Like she wouldn't have a favorite pie flavor?
Yeah. I wonder if
Yeah.
young Kreia had a favorite pie flavor, and then she got cast out of the Jedi Order, and she said, "Fine, no one can have pies anymore."
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. It was a big scary Kreia episode, but it actually ended up being a lot of fun. And I'm not recording in the ideal circumstances with all of my like microphone technologies, so if the sound is horrible, I apologize, but like sometimes when you go to Malachor and back, it's kind of like hell, like you're not gonna have the best reception in hell.
That's right. The Atreus Academy does not have very good reception for doing your recording in, but that's okay. That's okay. I think that the sound will be okay. And yeah, this was I was never really as scared of it as you. Maybe I should have been more scared of it. I don't know for sure. Let us know out there. But yeah, I think that it was good to talk about. And like I said, Kreia is so like vast and like the areas you could explore about Kreia, about the character, about to the actions within KOTOR 2 and kind of beyond. It's a lot to talk about and digest, and that's okay. We have more Kreia to talk about when we get to our icecapade. That's going to probably blow this out of the water for sure. Blow it off the ice, I guess, would be a better way to say that, but
Yeah. So I guess I just started coughing because we've been talking for a while. And yeah, usually I guess we close out episodes by saying, "May the Force be with you always," but Kreia wouldn't say that. What would she say, Brian?
she would say, "Apathy is death."
Apathy is death.
The Older Public Podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, as well as everywhere else that Anchor Podcasts are distributed. Subscriptions, reviews, and shares help us out.
And if you want to connect with the podcast on Twitter, we can be found at Old Republic Pod. And if you want to connect with me, I can be found on Instagram at astro_droid_.
You can find us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/oldrepublicpodcast. Our intro and outro themes were composed by Dennis S. Mowers at dennissmowersmusic.com.
This episode of the Old Republic Podcast has been brought to you by Nikki Dog from Patreon. May the Force be with you. We will be back soon. Bye for now.